In this coaching session, you're going to meet Kyle, a guy who's hell-bent on finding love, growing his real estate business, and making a difference in other people's lives.
My name's Kyle. I'm 33 years old from Chicago, Illinois. I'm a realtor. I also drive for Lyft. I came here to help me finish some things in my life, and I'm excited for the opportunity to come and hopefully inspire some other folks to understand what's already inside of them.
Now, I fell in love with Kyle's enthusiasm, and one thing I know for sure is you can't inspire other folks unless you get your own shit together. This coaching session is a masterclass in why it is critical to make peace with your past if you want to have a powerful future. And here's another thing that I know, having coached so many people. It's that you always know when you hit on the truth, because people react viscerally when you call them out on shit they don't want to deal with. And boy, do I call Kyle out on how incomplete he is about his past, and it sounds like this.
First of all, it's terrifying to tell people I'm sober, especially, you know, it still is. It's still the fear of being rejected for a good choice.
Who the fuck cares?
I get it. I mean, talking about it objectively, it totally makes sense.
But see, you don't own the sobriety yet. You're not proud of it.
Because I feel like I got on the defense early in these new relationships, and I'm like people are like, well, why are you sober? Why this?
But hold on.
Sorry.
Do you see how rattled you're getting?
Yeah, because it's something that I'm like, I'm pissed off about.
Why?
Because I shouldn't have to fucking defend my decisions.
Excuse me. Your whole body language just changed.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
Uncross your fucking arms. Nobody is attacking you.
It's totally vulnerable.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Aisha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name's Luis. I'm from Brazil.
54321. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall. The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit. Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick Ass with Mel Robbins.
We're going to do great.
Yes, we are. I love that you're giving me a pep talk.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys. So tell me about your background. Like, where did you grow up?
My parents were married, but my dad split pretty early, about 6 months in. My grandmother, who is my heart and soul, was the other parent for a long time. There was always a constant flow of love and things like that, but definitely didn't have a male role in my life until I was about 8. My mom met someone, which is great, and we love each other today, but it was a hard transition. They met and got married within a year, and all of a sudden, I had this male role in my life, and I was used to being the star, the center of attention. Sharing that space was definitely tough.
So how old were you when your dad left?
6 months.
And
I've never met him.
Ever?
Ever. Someone from his camp reached out on my 26th birthday. Some woman called my grandma's house and wanted my phone number. And my grandma was like, who is this? And she's like, well, it's from his dad. And she's like, well, okay, you can leave your number and I'll give it to him. And if he'd like to call you, he will. And she was flabbergasted. But I chose that he chose to miss out on the awesomeness of me. So if you don't get to be there when I need you, you don't get to be there when you might need me.
So it's not something that's complete for you, though.
No. We'll get into the fact that I used to drink quite a bit.
When did you start drinking?
We go in my house. I was like a latchkey kid, and my friends and stuff would come over, and my folks had, you know, booze in the house, and we'd be like, ooh, let's see what gin tastes like. This had to be probably like 12, 13.
How much were you drinking in high school?
Every weekend, definitely.
To blackout?
Sure. Most days.
So did your mom know?
I'm sure she suspected. Yeah.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about your evolution drinking.
Totally.
Because it sounds like it started as a curiosity.
100.
However, I don't know of a lot of sixth graders that are really hitting the vodka out of curiosity.
Totally. So what I haven't mentioned yet, too, is that I had OCD as a kid as well. I would do things in sets of eight.
Do you remember when that started?
Yeah, it was like eight or nine, right when my stepdad came in, right when the change of living situation. There was like,
how did your mother tell you she was getting remarried and he was moving in?
I didn't meet him until right before the wedding. We were kept separate, like two dogs about to go to a fight or something.
How did that make you feel?
Like shit. It was rough. First of all, like I was losing my control and power in the house. I was losing my relational power with my mother. There was a more important male coming in her life. As somebody who also didn't have a father, it was tough. It was really tough to do that.
You know, it's interesting because clearly you've been through a lot of therapy.
I have.
I can tell because the way in which you describe this has a very clinical nature.
Sure.
And so when you describe the fact that your mom had met somebody new, you talk about it from the lens of power.
Yeah.
But you don't actually talk about it in terms of how a 7 or an 8-year-old actually feels. What did it feel like truly in terms of the abandonment or the fear that this was happening?
There was fear that somebody I didn't know was now in my house.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fear that I'd lose my mom too. There was fear that I wasn't good enough for him either. Even in the fact that I feared him and feared the change, there's still a child in there that just wants to be loved and just wanted somebody to say, "You're cool, man. You're the shit. Go on, grow, be great. Let me support you."
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that's stayed in there for a long time.
Well, it started, I'm sure, with your dad leaving.
Yeah.
And when your mom didn't introduce you to him and didn't make it safe and kept him away, I'm sure it actually just made it scarier.
I remember just being like, but why? Why can't I meet him? Why? And there wasn't an answer.
So when did you go from sad to angry?
It had to be quick. I was angry and I was sad. So there was a kind of perfect storm also too of the stepdad coming in and the change of circumstance where my grandma actually moved to Colorado at that almost overlapping. And so then it became this vacuum of like new parent figure and loss of rock strong, most stable love bond that I have ever had being 1,000 miles away.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It got.
You were eight?
I was eight. Eight is great. Eight's still my lucky number, but eight is a place that...
How the fuck is eight your lucky number?
Who the fuck knows?
Seriously.
I don't know. It is. It always is. It always is, and it shows up everywhere in my life.
One of the things that I love about you immediately is how positive you are. But the thing that really is just, it's just right in my face when I listen to you is that there is something that is so unresolved underneath the surface. My fear about your ability to truly start the next chapter of your life and to put this chapter in the past and to be able to turn the page is that you've missed the real lesson of all of this. The drinking on some level became about power and became a gigantic fuck you, but it actually started as a desire to disappear. And then I think when nobody notices that you've disappeared, it becomes even more painful.
Wow. That's some shit. Yeah. Yeah, there certainly were, like, there was a lot of things I would do, too, to just, like, Fucking look at me. See me. I'm right here. There's a lot of things that wow, that's deep. That's some shit.
And I think that's the shit that's still here.
Yeah.
And that's where you don't have power, and that's where you're not happy.
Yeah.
And that what the next chapter for you is about is to really complete that for yourself and to see a different angle on all those ways in which you behaved in the past that were coming from a really deep place of hurt, and then seeing how that gets carried forward. You were screaming for somebody to pay attention.
Come back. Like, don't leave me here like this.
That's it, right there. Yeah. You're going to make me cry. Come back.
Just come back. Take me with you.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. That is some shit. It's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's pretty clear what happened. Dad leaves at 6 months. You never, ever meet him again.
No.
Your mom remarries shotgun style in terms of you didn't get to meet the stepdad. And in fact, he was kept away. And that created all this fear and this rejection for you. And then all of a sudden he enters the house. And it's a totally different dynamic. And your mother basically disappears because she's now with the stepdad.
Totally.
And then your grandmother, who is your rock, who raised you with your mom once your dad left, moves across the country to Colorado. And here you are 8 years alone. And you start drinking with friends.
Totally.
So how does this story roll forward?
So I ended up moving to Colorado.
How old were you?
I was 18. I started as like a manager at Target store. I was like a front end manager. And then I moved to like, you know, clothing retail. And then eventually I start college 2 years after I get there. Drinking is crescendoing at this point. We are stepping it up. We are going full bore.
How much would you drink a day?
Let's go with 9 drinks a day.
Like mixed drinks?
The gay bar drinks. Yeah.
What are those?
Strong as hell. We are out.
Wait, when did you come out?
Oh, I came out at 16.
Okay.
I was still in the house.
And what was your mom and stepdad's reaction?
I had the most gossamer, beautiful coming out story. I mean, mom made
Let's
one.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, so I had met my first boyfriend online back in the AOL chat room days. Christmas time was coming up, and I was like, I'm going to get him a DVD player. And so I had my mom take me to Best Buy and help me, like, asked her to front me for this DVD player, the brand new technology. And she just questions me. She's like, what's your relationship like with Adam? And I was like, yeah, I'm gay. And the next line out of her mouth was, well, I guess I'm not having any grandchildren. So then that was like, oh, let's make this about you. 2 middle fingers in the air, stomp up my room. About 45 minutes later, I get like the knock on my door, and like reconciliation starts right then. And
what did she say?
She apologized. She realized, I think, the error of that statement, and that through all of this shit, Mel, there's still a lot of love in this house. There is a lot of love.
And so tell me more about the drinking. Was there a tipping point?
Yes, absolutely.
What was it?
We're in Denver. I'm living in Denver. I'm almost through college. All of a sudden, one night, I am feeling like I'm going to die. I have, like, this wave of, like, holy fuck. What the fuck? What's going on? Holy shit. And later learning, this is what a panic attack looks like. I didn't know. I thought it was dead. I thought the walls were caving in.
Were you plowed at the time? Or was this
Okay. Girl, I was fucked up.
So when you lived in Denver, you were drunk 7 nights a week.
I was bartending at this point. When I wasn't bartending, I was bar attending. And we were just out there having the time of our life. We were doing it.
What was the tipping point?
I was freaking the fuck out, like, regularly. And so now it becomes a point where panic attacks start becoming regular. And now we're doing this fun little game where we wake up, we have a panic attack, so we start drinking in the morning. And then we go in for our meeting at, I'm doing outside sales at this point, and, oh, now you're out in the field. Oh, girl, stop at the liquor store, grab a little airplane bottle, this will calm you down. And then we do that. Then we go have a couple meetings, sell some shit. Then, oh, guess what? 3:30, get your calls in, calls are done, whoop, meet you at the bar, see you there. And then we go drunk. And then we wake up in the morning, and then we rebound anxiety. And all of a sudden, it's 7 days a week, and we're going down, and up, and down, and up. And it's just rebound anxiety to drunk, to balancing out the anxiety with the drinking, and then waking up from that drunk stupor with a fucking panic attack every morning. So much so, I can't even get out of bed. There's days I just call into work, just like, nope, nope, not doing it. Can't do it.
Wow.
Rough.
How the hell long did you survive that?
2 years in this cycle, in this pattern. And I hid it from everyone. It was just my thing. It was my beast to bear.
I can't believe you kept your job for as long as you did.
Oh, girl, I've been through 97 jobs. I have drank my way into getting fired out of pretty much every experience in my life. I have had some of the best jobs. I've had some horrible jobs, but I was an aide to a senator. I have done a lot of things. I have done many, many things. And continually in my goddamn life, fucking drinking had gotten in the way.
What is the thing that you are the most ashamed of that you did drunk?
I've alienated many friendships. I've manipulated my family. I've manipulated friends. I've said things to people that when they tell me back the things I've said, I'm embarrassed. They didn't deserve some of this shit. This place that you can get to when you're an alcoholic, when you're drinking, where you just are in your zone. And I would just tear through life, not caring who I stepped on. It was shit. I treated people like shit sometimes. I treated myself like shit. I'd eat like shit. I put on a ton of weight. People would call me fat and I would fucking agree with them. I started losing my hair and people would make comments on that and I would just sit with it and I'd just be like, you are a fucking piece of shit. And I accepted it. That's the worst thing I ever did.
So true.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you get sober?
Well, all of a sudden, my life was just, it was so hard to maintain my drinking relationship, my anxiety relationship, my primary job and my secondary job. At this point, I was pretty much drinking 24/7. There was barely a time I was sober during my day. I was at a place where I was throwing up straight vodka. I didn't even need ice at this point. I really didn't even need the glass that it came in. I could just drink it right out of the bottle, right next to my bed. And I'm sitting in my room. And I'm just looking and I'm like laying at the foot of the bed, almost fetal. And I'm like, this is fucked up, girl. You are fucking worth more than this. So let's talk about ways out. And I was able to break it down to there's 4 ways out. I'm in jail because I hit someone with my car. I'm dead. I continue going until something else horrible happened. There's some unknown. Or you get sober. And I don't know who, what energy, spirit, God, whomever, someone clobbered me over the head that night. And they said, call somebody.
Who'd you call?
This girl Ingrid that I worked with, who I knew would not judge me. Who I knew would take my text at 2 in the morning and say, could you please be here at 6? I need to go somewhere. She, without question, said, I'll be right there. Give me the address. She knew. Everyone knew. I don't know why. It was her. We were never close. It was a weak tie. We'd have nice times at work. We'd talk. It was great. She was very nice. We don't talk much anymore, but she was there. She was there when I needed her.
How did she make you feel? Like, what was it about her that made you call?
Before that night, she was like, Kyle, she's like, I worry about you. She's like, I love you. You gotta, she's like, she would say like, you might want to make some changes. You know, she'd say things that were not of a judgmental nature, not of a overstepping her line. She didn't try and do it from an authoritarian standpoint. Well, I wasn't ready to hear any message like that at that point, but God damn it. If I didn't call her first when I knew, I knew it was time.
Tell me about that call.
Oh, fuck. It was like a Facebook message, I think. I just was like, I was sitting there, so like, with one eye open and barely able to see, I looked up a place and I found a place. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I said, well, this looks good. I researched this and I was like, hey, girl. I just messaged and I was like, this is done. I was like, I need help. I can't do this alone. And I said, I need you to take me there. And I said, I'm going to be drunk as fuck when you get here. I'm going to just drink tonight. I'm going to keep going. And just grab me. Just come in and get me if I'm not awake.
And do you remember her arriving?
I remember, kind of remember her being there. I remember in the car. She was just like, hey, how are you? Good. She's like, do you want to go to McDonald's or anything? Like, you ready? Like, let's do this. It's just like, she kept me, I'm like crying at this point. I'm like, a mess. I'm like, scared as fuck about what this looks like. Scared as fuck I'm going to fail at this. Scared. Scared of the guy on the other side of drinking is going to be the same fucking loser that I was as a child, that I felt in my mind. The same inadequate, not good enough, broken mess of piles of partial human that doesn't know how to be whole. We were quiet for a while, and we talked for a while, and we listened to music for a while. There was a little bit of a drive, and it was just me getting ready to start.
Wow. So who is the guy that you discovered when you got sober?
Jesus. Whew. Now? This guy's fucking cool. For a while. I'll say it. I have a good time right now. I have a great time now.
How long have you been sober?
March 5th will be 4 years. The detox program was horrible, but we made it through. I was literally Mel Robbins going in 5-minute increments. That was all I could do. All I could do was get through 5 minutes. And I would count, I'd pick a random number, and I'd say 43. 1, 2, 3. I get to 43 and pick another number. 12. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I would do this. And all of a sudden, I had 5 minutes. And then, girl, can you get through another 5? All right, let's go. Finally, 5 came in 10. 10 to 15. 15 to 30. 30 to an hour. An hour to a day. A day to a week. And we just build and build and build. And as this confidence came up, the panic attacks were still there. But I was able to, I say, girl, you have 2 days sober. You can do this. Come on. Just breathe it out.
Where did the resolve come from to get sober? Like, what kept you going?
Things were so ugly and bad and traumatizing. And there was just a re-victimization every day and a reappearance of feelings of all kinds of things. There was an ugliness that resided over me that was self-imposed, that I knew I was better than. And I knew even then, there's somebody so awesome down here. He wants to come out and he wants to be here. He wants to help people. And you can't do that if you're fucked up yourself, girl. You can't do that if you're a drunk. You can't make others feel good about themselves when you don't feel good about you.
What have you learned about yourself now that you're sober?
I've learned what I can tolerate and what I will not tolerate. And I've also learned that I'm not afraid to say yes, and I'm not afraid to say no to all kinds of things in my life. I wasn't afraid to say, yes, I'm going to get this weight off of me. I lost 55 pounds. I wasn't afraid to say, yes, I'm going to spend all this money and become a realtor. After I separated from my job. It's amazing. I have learned that I have a strength. I have a gift. I have an outgoing personality by nature, but I'm not afraid to use that. I'm not afraid to be and live in that and do this kind of good work and hopefully just help one more person. Getting it right actually means being okay with getting it wrong. I have this perfectionist in me, this kid who was pulled himself out, this kid who needs things to just be right, just to be right now. But perfection, for me, is starting to look like the ugliness, the sadness, the fuckery of it all is okay. And it's part of who I am.
How old are you, Kyle?
I'll be 34 next week.
So what would the 34-year-old Kyle, like if you could go back into that scene in your life when you were 8 years old.
Oh, Jesus.
And your grandmother's leaving and this man you haven't met is about to come in. Coaching yourself. Yeah. What would you tell yourself that none of the adults told you?
First of all, I give him a big hug because I love hugs. Secondly, I would just tell that guy, hey, man, it's going to suck. It's going to be some shit that you're going to see and you're going to do. But it doesn't have to be who you are forever. Just hang in there. Just love everybody. Love yourself. And know that you're good enough to get through it. And you deserve the good life you're going to have. And there's going to be a big party waiting for you when you get there.
No booze, though.
No, no. A big celebration. Let me clarify. I wish I had known that you can be. I accept the fact that I could live like an asshole for so long and then one day decide, nope, not cool anymore, not going to be that guy, and now I don't have to be an asshole anymore.
I can relate to that.
I've stopped therapy. I'm going to start back up, and we're going to put to bed a couple of things.
What are the couple things you need to put to bed?
You know, the anxiety stems from just this place of, there were, you know, I don't want to call them hallucinations, but kind of like a place in my life where I felt like there were people looking down and judging me. And there's just this.
Of course there were. You were fucking drunk.
I was fucking drunk.
They should have judged you.
Absolutely. But a sense where like people could see in and know, like almost like a thought police.
Here's what I actually think is the place for you to have a quantum leap.
Yeah.
And that is for you to write out every single person that you would be afraid to bump into.
Whoa.
Because real estate is a business where you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Driving a Lyft is a business where somebody can get into your car at random.
Yeah.
And you are walking around with the ghosts of the past.
Totally.
Unresolved. And I believe that until you actually learn the lessons that are in this chapter, the next one's not beginning. To the extent that there are people in your life that you are not comfortable seeing or being around, or it would suck if you bumped into them, you owning your own transformation by reaching out. And look, you can write a one paragraph thing that says, as part of my recovery, I'm reaching out and apologizing to people. And I don't even remember what I did to you. I was so fucked up.
Wow.
But all I know is that in order for to be successful and happy, I need to apologize for whatever I may have done. And I need to say for myself that I have changed, that I am a different person, and that I hope if I ever bump into you, you greet me as a friend.
Holy shit, Mel.
And that is where your anxiety stems from.
Oh my God.
It's that the ghost of who you used to be is out in the psyches of other people. They're not reading your minds. You're holding a space where you're trying to make sure that you don't fucking bump into somebody.
Yeah. Oh my God. You're nail on the head.
And so I want you to make a list of every single person that you would feel any agita bumping into. Okay.
Okay.
And then I want you to come up with a one paragraph just thing that's about you doing it for you. And basically just saying, as part of your healing, you're doing this. Because here's the thing that I see for you. I see a guy that if you can overcome the kind of shit show that you used to be and take control of your life in the way that you have, you can build any kind of business that you want. You can be judgment-free of yourself. You can be fucking happy. You can have a relationship where you're not in the relationship playing games because you're afraid somebody's leaving. But you're just fully yourself. What happened?
the love life is definitely a place that I still struggle.
Well, because you're not in it.
No, I'm not.
What would it look like for you to just be you in a relationship?
I don't know what that guy looks like. It's hard for me to, like, to let anyone fully in and be pure and clear and honest and just let them see, to expose it all of this shit.
I think that the next chapter of your life doesn't begin until you are. And so I can guarantee you the anxiety will go away, because your anxiety is all about managing unknown.
100%.
And the only unknown in your life right now is whether or not somebody from your past needs to be shown an apartment tomorrow.
You're not wrong, Mel.
Well, it's because I've lived with anxiety for 24 years, and I've made that list, and I've wronged a lot of people. And when you think you can just forgive yourself but not do that extra layer, because here's the thing, and this is true with relationships too, Kyle, and it's a really hard thing to understand. We spend so much time trying to manipulate other people into liking us, and we spend so much time in relationships giving people little pieces of information, but holding on to the gold. Are you in a romantic relationship right now?
No, not. I'm the closest I've been, but I'm not. We're not.
Okay, so what are you holding on to?
First of all, it's terrifying to tell people I'm sober, especially, you know, it still is. It's still the fear of being rejected for a good choice.
Who the fuck cares?
I get it. I mean, talking about it objectively, it totally makes sense.
But see, you don't own the sobriety yet. You're not proud of it.
I am fucking proud of it.
Okay, then who the fuck cares? If you're with some ding dong that can't handle the fact that you're sober,
he doesn't deserve to be happy.
Dude, it's on him. If you're embarrassed or ashamed or managing sobriety because you're afraid of the reaction of some guy, then it's on you.
Yeah.
You don't have a shot of meeting the one until you fully own who you are.
Yeah.
And realize that the right person for you to either date or be in a committed partnership has no issue with you being sober.
Yeah.
Right now, you have the issue. You have the story. And so this is the biggest breakthrough that you could have, which is truly owning what happens if you're sober. That's part of who you are.
Absolutely.
And so what are you thinking about right now as it relates to sobriety and dating and the bullshit that's there?
Yeah. Because I feel like I got on the defense early in these new relationships, and I'm like people are like, well, why are you sober? Why this?
But hold on.
Sorry.
Do you see how rattled you're getting?
Yeah, because it's something that I'm like, I'm pissed off about.
Why?
Because I shouldn't have to fucking defend my decisions.
Excuse me. Why are you? Your whole body language just changed.
I'm sure it did.
This is the core of everything. Uncross your fucking arms. Nobody is attacking you.
It's totally vulnerable.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. In life, there's certain subjects, and your sobriety is one of them. So there's certain subjects for people where they get really hooked. One of them is sexual abuse. Another one might be divorce, or, you know, kind of whether or not you have kids, bankruptcy. And for you, it's sobriety. Yeah. You are so fucking hooked and angry that you're sober. And when the topic comes up, you can blow smoke out your ass and, you know, fart unicorns and rainbows about how amazing it is. But the truth is, there are days that you're pissed that you're sober.
Yeah, that's true.
The coolest thing about you is that you beat an addiction, that you survived, that you made a choice, that you make a choice every day that most fuckers are not strong enough to make. And instead of being proud of that and actually understanding that talking about it in a way that is responsible and proud and not like on a soapbox, that's your gift.
Yeah.
And in the one area where you want intimacy, you're acting like a douchebag about it.
Shit. Yeah. Wow. We got work to do.
What about the anger?
I will have to work.
Are you pissed that you're missing out on something? Like, what is the root of the anger?
Mel Robbins, there is a place in me, inside of me that says, why can't I do that too? Why am I not good enough to drink right now? Yeah, there's some anger. I guess there is some anger down there because I want to do all the things too. And it feels like a limit that's imposed. And I try and just create this space without limits, but this is something that when unbridled takes my life out of control. So it pisses me off that I have to put a limit on something.
You don't have to put a limit on sobriety.
That's true.
You're sober because you have to be. And the reason why, and this is the final lesson for you, anytime that the fuck you, fuck the world side of you comes out, you lose. And whenever the fuck you comes out, that is the old Kyle.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I really want you to get this around the sobriety. Because you're not 100% proud of being sober. I'd rather have you be a little sad that it is what it is and that you did enough partying for 10 lifetimes and to own that realness. And it's fine every once in a while to be a little annoyed that it is what it is. But the fuck you piece never works. And you got really kind of prickly and nasty and snarky when you started describing how you felt when people that you're dating ask about sobriety.
Yeah.
And so there's a link between the button of not feeling good enough and feeling vulnerable and your immediate reaction being fuck you.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, Kyle, you want to be a seven-figure earner in real estate?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
You make this list and you will make that happen. Because there will be nothing holding you back in business. Nothing. The other shit with real estate, you can do better than almost anybody I've ever met. You're outgoing. You're a talker. You hustle. You're a connector. That's all that real estate is. But if you can get rid of this teeny little bit of residue from your past, your business will explode because you will be free. The third thing is, in the current relationship, you got to bring your full self and you got to remind yourself that when somebody reacts negatively, they judge you or they leave, it's on them. The second you start manipulating this bullshit, you've manipulated them, you're responsible for how they react. And then finally, the piece that will really help you is thinking about the areas in your life where you still don't feel good enough and realizing that you are susceptible to going from Kyle to fuck you. Let's come up with a name or Kyle, the real estate mogul, Kyle, the like happy millionaire, Kyle, the like Kyle, the difference maker, Kyle, the sober something that is this next chapter. Who is that guy? Give me like a title.
A moniker?
Yeah.
I want to say Kyle, the guide.
Kyle, the guide. Okay, fabulous.
Kyle, the guide.
Awesome. And what are your attributes? If somebody were to meet you and then leave, they'd go, wow, that Kyle is...
funny.
Yeah.
Kind.
Yep.
Inspiring.
Great.
Fun.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Successful.
Successful. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear a fuck you in there.
Where'd that go?
So Kyle the guide.
Kyle the guide.
Is the next chapter.
Awesome.
Awesome is right.
Awesome.
Oh my God, you're amazing.
You're amazing.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mel. I'm going to do a first draft on my apology note. I'm going to start it today. I might not send it today, but I'm going to get ready to send.
There's no doubt in my mind that Kyle now feels respected and loved and ready to change too. It's so easy, isn't it, to get caught spinning your wheels when you try to change on your own? That's why I keep saying it's so much easier and more fun when we do it together. Because until Kyle had the insight that he was still fucking pissed about being sober, absolutely nothing was going to change. And there's no way he was going to gain that insight on his own. So takeaway number one, if you're somebody like Kyle that's trying hard, that's crossing the T's and dotting the I's, but you feel like you're just not making any headway, I guarantee you there is something you cannot see or that you are refusing to see. The other thing about Kyle that I want to point out, Kyle is a great example of someone who is very busy, but is busy spinning in circles. And you know, I've been like that in my past too. I think one of the reasons why people stay so busy is because if we have to slow down, we would be forced to deal with whatever pain is underneath the surface. So if you re-listen to the coaching segment with Kyle, and I encourage you to do it, I want you to pay attention to something. I want you to listen to the pace, even in his voice, because whenever he slowed down, that's when the greatest moments of insight and emotion happened. So the obvious takeaway for all of us is that we need to slow down and tune in to the emotions that are in there. In order to see the problem, you're gonna have to slow down. And look, if you're scared of what you might find, you don't have to do it alone. Go talk to somebody. It'll be faster and a hell of a lot more fun. Now, the second takeaway, which is related, is something that I want to say about addiction. And that is that any single destructive habit that you have, it's also a mask for pain. We talked about this in Kim's episode. Remember, Kim had the trouble with smoking? And we discussed the fact that researchers now believe that addictions can be classified as habit dysfunctions. That just means patterns of behavior that have gone awry. And yes, it's true. And yes, there is a chemical component to addiction. But the real killer is the fact that you're self-soothing emotional pain. In Kyle's case, he used alcohol. Kim used cigarettes, and Jessie, she used food. Remember, she labeled herself as an emotional eater who was soothing herself with comfort food. And even after you break the physiological dependence of your addiction, if you haven't gotten to the root of the emotional pain that led you to the addiction in the first place, you're never going to break the underlying addiction. So while Kyle is sober, and that's incredible, and Kim is quitting, and that's incredible, and Jessie is taking responsibility for her health, that's incredible, the next level of healing and power is in dealing with the emotional pain that you're masking. It is going to be uncomfortable to deal with it, but it is the only way that you're going to truly heal. Now, the final and third takeaway is a tool that you can use to forgive yourself for the mistakes that you've made in your past. And that tool is to embrace and be proud of where you're at right now. You know, one of the things that you've learned in this episode listening to Kyle is that he hasn't embraced his sobriety. And by not embracing his sobriety, he is unable to get rid of the shame of his past. I mean, think about that for a minute. How could you possibly move beyond the mistakes that you've made in your past if you're not even proud and celebratory of how far you've come? And by being embarrassed and defensive of his sobriety, you know what he's doing? He's invalidating his own progress. That's why I told him he has to make a list of everybody he's incomplete with, and he's got to start the process of not only making amends, but also publicly acknowledging how far he's come now that he's sober. Look, the moment you take responsibility for your past, that's really important. but it is also essential that you take pride in how far you've come. You're only human, and you'll gain the freedom and control back in your life the second you start feeling proud of where you are.
When Mel Robbins told me to uncross my fucking arms, that was the Real Talk Express coming back. That was the same kind of thing my aunt did. I didn't even realize I was doing it. And she broke me down in a positive way. It was exactly what I needed. I felt the moment of breakthrough.